This is a podcast from Bike99.com. For more details, see www.bike99.com/Camino. Camino de Santiago, or Way of St. James, is a collection of ancient pilgrim routes across northern Spain, dating back over 3,000 years. Up to 1 million people a year walk the most popular of the routes, the Camino Francés. It takes the pilgrim 900 kilometres, or 550 miles, from the Pyrenees to Santiago de Compostela, via Pamplona, Burgos and León. Most people walk the route, taking about 4 to 6 weeks. But for me, by bike is the best way to do it. In this podcast, I'll explain why. My name's Rob Ainsley, and I'll also give you some practical advice on how to cycle the route. You'll also hear a few extracts from the audio diary I made of my own cycle trip along the Camino in 2011.
Good bit of local music. Nice Albarino, local Galician white wine. The rain's stopped. It's all looking good.
So why do I recommend cycling the Camino? Well, first, it takes less time. We can't all take 6 weeks off for a walking holiday. And you can cycle the Camino in one intense week, on a road bike and on tarmac. Or you can explore it in two more leisurely weeks, going on or off-road. You can start from anywhere you like. Indeed, if you're doing the Camino in the authentic historical way, you start from your front door. A popular start point for the Camino Francés is from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port, in the far south of France, on the doorstep of the Pyrenees. But I started from Pamplona, a few dozen kilometres over the Pyrenees into Spain, and a place more usually associated with bulls.
It's day one, it's Saturday, it's about 9:10, and I'm just about to start. I'm at the Portal de Francia, which is the gate into Pamplona's old city walls. I'm going to start from here. It's an old, splendid old 16th century gate, still intact with a little drawbridge and all the mechanisms still working, and it's still used by traffic, which squeezes through the tiny opening. Anyway, here we go, 750 kilometres from here. Right. Pushing this bit through the old town, it's marked as one way, so I'll walk my bike. Now this little bit of the Camino is actually on the same route as the bull running in July, so what happens then, I don't know. Pilgrims going one way, bulls coming the other. No bulls today, but a very handsome old town, and these sort of flat cobbled streets with the route of the Camino marked out in little plaques which have the shell symbol to denote the way, and that's the symbol that's often worn by the pilgrims. In fact, I can see one guy loaded up behind me, he's walking it, obviously, with a very large backpack and sleeping mats and stuff. Now, the next thing to do is find a bank and get some money. I don't think pilgrims had this problem.
Cycling the Camino is not a compromise of route. The historic path is virtually all paved over now, so the road is the original route, going through all the historic towns and villages. The route the walkers take almost all goes parallel to, alongside, or even on, roads. So it's not really a wilderness experience, and is often, to be honest, rather boring. Walkers have long, dull stretches for days at a time, whereas on a bike you can get through these in a matter of hours. On a bike, you can adapt the route as you like. So on a mountain bike with suspension, you can cycle the entire length of the walker's route. There are no gates or stiles, and 99% of it is easily cyclable tarmac, shale or farm tracks. Or you could follow the route on a road bike, sticking to well-surfaced roads all the way. Or, on a hybrid or hardtail mountain bike, you can mix and match, doing road bits for speed, but picking the most scenic off-road sections. For instance, the first few kilometres out of Pamplona, which cross a high ridge with some sweeping views, and which give you some of the rare, genuinely rocky get-off-and-push stretches.
That whooshing sound is the sound of wind turbines. I'm up on the ridge now. I thought I was on the ridge about 3/4 of an hour ago. I was nowhere near it, and I've been pushing up the track ever since. There's a line of about 30 or 40 wind turbines, quite grand actually. And we've got this fabulous panorama. Pamplona in the distance behind us, the Pyrenees right over there on the horizon, covered in snow. And I hope just over the top of this ridge, it's going to be downhill at last.
However remote the Camino feels, it's actually never more than a handful of kilometres from a village or a town. At the very least, there'll be a basic shop and a bar selling snacks, and in many places there'll be supermarkets, bakeries, restaurants and bustling markets. And in Basque villages, you'll also see people playing the national sport, pelota.
That's the sound of a guy practicing his pelota in a frontón. It's a huge court, about the size of four tennis courts, I suppose, and he's got a wooden racket, and he's smacking the ball squash style against the far wall.
There are plenty of water fountains en route, and you'll be grateful for these, as it can get very hot and there are long stretches with no shade. But one of the most famous fountains on the Camino is not water at all. It's wine. That's right, free, help yourself wine. It's just outside the town of Estella, west of Pamplona, where the wine producer Irache kindly provide a barrel of house red for pilgrims to help themselves to. In moderation, of course. Unfortunately, I can't provide an audio diary entry here. There seems to be something wrong with the recording. It's all muffled and slurred. You won't see that much unusual wildlife on the Camino, though there are some things you might not see at home.
I'm in the town of Nájera, which has quite a nice old town. It's dominated by some big sandstone cliffs. I heard a strange noise as I was cycling past, a sort of clacking noise, and it stalks. These sandstone cliffs have a colony of about 2 dozen storks by the look of it, and they've been clacking away, coming back, feeding their young, and on a lovely day it's just been a real nice surprise to see that.
There's plenty of accommodation along the Camino. There are pilgrim hostels every couple of kilometres along the route, almost all of them very cheap. In fact, the most basic, offering just a mattress and blanket in a large dormitory and access to a kitchen, will only cost 5 or 6 euros. Most of them welcome cyclists, but in high season, say May to September, they fill up very quickly, so you might have to cycle around and possibly take a more expensive hotel or hostel than you'd planned. There are plenty of mid-price and upmarket options on the route too, and in the large towns there are modern full-facility hostels.
I'm in the Alberg in Sahagún, which I managed to get to tonight thanks to a big tailwind. I've basically done 2 days in one, about 140 kilometres today. Didn't really feel like it. I'm staying in the Alberg, which, as you can hear, is a very convivial and international sort of place. There's maybe 2 dozen, possibly 3 dozen people staying here in this big old church, I think. The whole upper half of which has been converted into sleeping quarters and a kitchen, with quite nice modern wood furnishings. Downstairs is the reception, tourist information and bike storage. There's various Canadians, Portuguese, Spanish, Germans, even a couple of English people heartily attacking a very large meal produced by one of the Spanish guys, I think, which involves mountains of chorizo and cheese.
The Camino is very well signposted. You could quite easily follow it without a map or guidebook, though obviously such things are useful. A really good source of information, especially on accommodation, comes from the Confraternity of St. James, an organisation specifically for people doing the Camino. Their website, csj.org.uk, has lots of information and a bookshop. It's well worth joining.
It's Thursday, nearly 2 o'clock, and I'm possibly at the highest point on the Camino. The cycle guide says it's not marked, and this point isn't marked, so it must be it. I know it's very high up because for the last 2 hours we've been right in cloud with visibility about 50 metres, no more than that. We're about 1500 metres, something like that, at the moment, and there's been about 800 metres of climb today, so it's been quite strenuous so far, a lot of pushing. Lots of snow around here, and I went through a couple of quite remote villages, one abandoned village, Fonsebodon, which is being repopulated, so there's an albergue there and there are a few walkers. I wouldn't fancy walking the walker's route at the moment because it's very, very wet. There's some huge puddles the size of a tennis court. It's very muddy, very sandy, and at least the road which runs alongside it and which I'm cycling on is in decent nick. So shortly, in a kilometre or two, I hope, I'm going to have a very long downhill, something like 20k. It's a very alpine sound, all those cowbells. About an hour and a half outside Villa Franca, and on my way up into the mountains to Ossebrero. And it's a lovely little rural road that I'm going up. Very sort of English Lake District type scenery. Some very impressive motorway viaducts above me.
There are many bike hire options, and a Google search will find you plenty. Some of them offer one-way hire. For example, I used Touranride, a Santiago-based company. They'll drop off a bike to your hotel in Pamplona, and 2 weeks later, you return it to their office in central Santiago. To rent a good mountain bike with panniers cost me €250, which worked out cheaper than getting my own bike there from England, and I can recommend them. They're at www.tourandride.com. That's www.tourandride.com. If you want to take your own bike, you have several options. There's the bike bus from the UK. Or you can get there by train and ferry, using the sea crossings between Plymouth or Portsmouth and Santander or Bilbao. You can now take your bicycles on Eurostar and get to southern France just by train. Lots of budget airlines can get you and your bike there too, although trusting your bike to the baggage handlers is something of a calculated risk. There's more information about all this on my website at bike99.com/camino. Now, about the weather. It can be murderously hot in midsummer, but whenever you go, you'll need rainproofs. Northern Spain can be very wet. In fact, Galicia in the northwest is very reminiscent of the English Lake District, not just in how it looks, but in precipitation too.
It's 5 o'clock on Saturday, and as you can hear, it's raining hard. It's been pelting down for about an hour and a half. I had an okay night last night in the hostel at Tria Castella, and set off today in a day that was promising a bit of rain, but the rain held off till after I'd been through Porto Marin, a very strange rebuilt town. Anyway, set off from there after lunch, got as far as a place called Ligonde, and it started throwing it down. I sheltered with a couple of walkers underneath the awning of an albergue which seemed to be shut, so we all ran the gauntlet of the rain to the next hamlet along, which fortunately wasn't very far, only about a kilometre. And luckily there's a lovely refuge here, very clean, nice bunks, nice idea, disposable sheets. And it's warm and it's dry, and it's amazing how much these simple things mean to you. Had I stayed cycling, I would be absolutely wet through and I'd be miserable and cold. And luckily, there's a restaurant, even though this is a very small village, there's a restaurant just across the road.
By day, the Camino is traditionally a quiet experience, one of meditation and introspection. But in the evening, at your hostel or in the village bars, it's all very sociable and very lively. Many places offer special cut-price menus for pilgrims, say €10 for a three-course dinner, including plenty of wine. And occasionally, such as in the restaurant just across the road from my rainy day hostel in Ligonde, even live traditional music. Yes, it's those Galician bagpipes.
So the owner of the restaurant opposite the albergue just came out with a pair of bagpipes. Obviously, they're Galician. Asturian or Galician?
Galicia.
Yeah, Galician bagpipes. Very different from Scottish bagpipes, very different melodies. I'm sure you're going to hear one right now. So we're inside the bar, and the two bagpipers are outside the bar. Is that to stop people going outside? It's an outdoor sound. The bagpipes is an outdoor instrument, definitely. The more outdoors, the better. They're still going away. Well, it must be chucking out time, because he's just started playing that. And what's the title again?
Naveira do Mar.
Naveira do Mar. Oh, it really is chucking out time. It's 9 o'clock on Monday morning, and after 9 days and an hour of cycling, I've finally arrived. I'm standing in front of the Cathedral of Santiago de Compostela, and it's hard to imagine a more miserable way to arrive. It's throwing it down with rain. It's very dark and gloomy. We're in thick swirling cloud. There's only a few people in the square in front of the cathedral. They're scurrying about with umbrellas, and just one or two cars driving across with their headlights full on. It's a really horrible morning, and it's a bit of an anticlimax. But we're here, we've made it, with a bike intact. Unstolen, no punctures, no mechanical problems, and I've taken a couple of celebration snaps, and I think I'll go and try and find tourist information and find somewhere to stay that's warm and dry.
Santiago de Compostela, the end of the Camino, is a big cathedral town with a very pleasant historic centre, worth staying a day or two to explore. You can visit the cathedral and pay homage to the remains of St. James, one of the 12 apostles of Jesus of Nazareth, who somehow ended up here. There are also special services for pilgrims. If you want to extend your trip, you can spend a day cycling to Cape Finisterre, a kind of Land's End of northwestern Spain. There are slow and infrequent local buses, but they can take bikes. Well, that's it from me. If you're inspired to cycle the Camino yourself, good luck, have a great trip. If you enjoy it half as much as I did, then you probably won't have stopped off at the Irachi wine fountain. If you have been, thanks for listening.